Thanks for joining us on the Port City Church podcast. More information about Port City Church is available at portcitychurch.org.
Can y'all hear that? My name is Mike, for those of you who've forgotten. I want to welcome all of our campuses together, and we've just got to see over here some children's baptisms. We're all like wiping tears from our eyes, and I really hope this rain stops. If it's not raining anywhere else, please stop. Well, it's so funny. We've had several events here that people I've met over the weeks from different campuses, from different places, and they said, hey, you know, I was talking to a guy the other day, and I was introduced to him. One of our staff members introduced me to him, and they were there with a couple of folks. He said, we've been coming to this church for the last 5 weeks, and we love it. And they didn't know that I was the pastor, so I was like, I hope I don't ruin it for you this week, right? So, I've been away doing a couple things, and I'm really excited to be beginning this new season with Port City, with our church, and what God's doing. And before I jump in, I want to just take a moment and address what happened yesterday. I think a lot of us are aware of the events in Charlottesville, Virginia yesterday, where a group of people decided to gather to proclaim that they believe that one race is superior to every other race. And in that, we get to witness the absolute darkness and desperation of human beings. And I think a lot of us, we see that, we get so angry, and I'm included in that. We feel angry. And as I reflect on it, thought about it, you know, trying to say, how do we respond? Because I don't know how I want to respond, but how do we respond? And it always makes me, so what I did was, is I went and I read, Martin Luther King wrote an article, a paper, I guess it was a speech. It was called The Only Way to Freedom. And then he talks about the people who perpetrate violence. It really is the driver is fear. And as I thought about this and then reading what Jesus wrote and realized that it's not, although I feel angry, that's not the response. What it is it's sad. It is sad. It is sad when human beings treat other human beings like this, regardless of what you believe about anything. And I thought about this, and so I wrote it in my journal like this: to think that human beings find any supremacy in anything of ourselves will always and only divide. And fear is the only force that protects a false supremacy of anything. And hate is the only way to mobilize such foolishness. And that's what we see in our culture. And what it reminded me of is the great hope that we have in God himself, because he said, I am love. When we talk about love, we're not just talking about a feeling or a mushy action toward another person. We're talking about the very essence of God, who is love and who is supreme. And what the gospel holds out for us isn't some way for us to finally figure it out and defeat all the evil forces. The gospel is a way to say the evil forces no longer have that kind of power. And therefore, when you and I, no matter where we are, when we come to Jesus, we come together. And it is the only hope. And so what I want for us to do is just to take a moment and to pray and to really just let God speak to us, because, you know, we really do get to be, the great thing about it is the way God demonstrated his love for us is by his sending his son Jesus. And the way he demonstrated his love to the world is by sending his people who believe that into the world. We get to be a part of the solution. That's good news. So if you'll pray with me, Father, I thank you. I thank you for the extraordinary genius of the gospel, that you would do for us what we can't do, and we see the desperation for it in so many areas, and particularly what happened yesterday in Charlottesville. I pray for those that were affected, the unbelievable actions of one human being to another. God, the beliefs that we hold on to because of some, who knows, the depths of why. God, we know we live in a country where we've had a past that embraced slavery and systems of injustice, and yet we live in a country that provides the most extraordinary opportunity for freedom on the planet. What an extraordinary paradox. Yet what we realize is that you are the master of the paradox. You turn death into life. You turn service into, I mean, you do so many things. God, that you redeem. And I ask that you would do that for us and you would use us to be a part of that. Father, I pray for your sufficiency in this and God, for hope to emerge out of this in ways that we can't yet see from where we are. And I ask you to allow us to be a part of that. And I pray the same of your son, Jesus. Amen. Thank you for being a part of that. Today, I'm trying to see how much time I have. I've been gone for a while, so I have a lot of stuff. This summer has honestly been one of the best summers of my life. Got a lot of stuff done, a lot of great events have happened, a lot of things have happened. Now, a lot of you guys know me. I have two girls, a 21-year-old and a 16-year-old. And when my kids, my oldest daughter was born, my wife and I knew nothing about having babies. In fact, my daughter was the first baby that I ever held. Yeah, it's not really that sweet for her because she's just like, I'm fumbling and dropping her. And, you know, we had some issues with her. You're kind of learning. And so she was like the guinea pig. She was the first one. And so I remember, though, when she was born, holding her. And there was this, and I don't know where it came from, this picture flashed in my mind. Like, it was probably within the first, and it was in the first day, maybe the first hours that she was born, holding her. This picture flashed in my mind that one day I would be standing dressed very nicely, and she's going to be wearing a white dress. I'm going to walk her down the aisle and give her to another man. And it just like, boom, just like that. It's about 3 weeks ago, that vision actually came true. Here it is. So, right before I walked her down the aisle, I decided to take a quick selfie. So here's us about to go, let's do this. Maybe, there we go. And then this is the gentleman that I had the privilege of handing her to. This is her and Carson. And so we celebrated that. So if I'm weepy today, that's one of the reasons why. I've never cried as much as I've cried in the last month in my whole entire life, except when I was two. But I'm excited. Now, here's the point, because there was this vision. There was this vision that came out of nowhere. I didn't know where it came from. I know where it came from, but it just popped in. I didn't ask for it. I wasn't expecting it. It just popped in. I remember going, oh my gosh, one day she's going to be wearing this dress. I'm going to be wearing this suit. I'm going to hand her to another guy. I remember that, like vividly. And then 21 years later, it comes true. And what's interesting is this vision was not a goal. It wasn't a goal. It wasn't someone going, how do I get her married? How do I find someone who will take her? You know. In fact, what I did, this is free parenting advice because it's 11 o'clock service. So we can take a little longer. So, I mean this. I took her coffee in bed every day from the time she was probably in the eighth or ninth grade until she graduated from high school. I took her coffee in her bed every day. And someone said to me, what are you trying to do? Make sure she never leaves your house? I said, no, I'm trying to make sure she marries really, really well. And so here's the thing. Thank you. All right, so here's my point. It wasn't the white dress walking out wasn't the goal. It was the vision. And that vision doesn't get accomplished because you set in your mind, there were 1,000 and 10,000 little things over time that cause this to be true. We think about vision and leadership and influence. Most of us think like, oh, that's somebody else, that's someone with a platform, that's someone who has a lot of big ambitions, that's someone with a lot of drive, that's someone who's type A or extroverted or whatever, that's somebody else other than me. And what I've learned is that is not at all the way God intended this or called us or created us to be, that leadership is something a lot less than that. I remember when I was became a pastor, and I've been in the ministry for a long time. I was, you know, I felt called. I always use the term loosely. I felt called, nudged. There was this haunting in my head, in my heart, that led me to start, you know, leave a career in architecture and to work in a church. And when, you know, God called me to start a church, it was like, oh, I hope this works. And people would ask me, you know, they'd come into the church and go, you know, it had, you know, grown and stuff was happening. And they said, well, Mike, you know, when were you called to preach? I was like, last week. Like, it was just last week. I didn't know what I was doing until then. And because that was really the truth. They said, Mike, how did you know that God had called you to do this? I'm like, I didn't. About 8 years in, I looked back and thought, wow, this is actually working. Maybe this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And I tell you that because a lot of people are waiting for this burning bush experience to feel this call of God. We read a verse like this, right, in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 1. It says, therefore, Paul's writing this. He says, I'm a prisoner for serving the Lord. I beg you to lead a life worthy of the calling that you've been given, for you've been called by God. Now, how does it make you feel? You're like, oh my gosh, what is my call? And so you're around looking for burning bushes everywhere. Like, where's the call? And I know there are some people who that's how it's happening. That's totally fine. It's in the Bible. God did that. For a lot of people, God said, hey, come follow me. And you took a step and you did something dumb and you did something else dumb. And God kept saying, keep following me. And eventually you're realizing, oh my gosh, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. That's been more my journey than anything else. And I tell you this because when we read verses like this, we're looking at this going, oh, this big global thing. And it says, therefore, Paul's like, because of something else, I'm telling you to do this. What is he saying this before? What is he saying this for? If you back up into verse 3, you see this. This is, this is chapter 4, verse 1. I urge you to lead a life worthy of the manner in which you've been called. If you back up in the chapter, you'll see this. And the whole point of this is to give you sort of the weight of this. He says, now all glory to God, who is able through his mighty work, and we're going to look at this passage over the next few weeks, through his mighty work, mighty power at work within us, to accomplish infinitely more than we ask or think or imagine. And some of you are like, oh, yes, God, rain it down. Right? You're like, rain it down. More, imagine, immeasurably more. You see hashtags. Got my new car, immeasurably more. It's baloney. Immeasurably more than we could ask or think. Glory to him in the church and in Christ Jesus through all generations forever and ever. Amen. Therefore, make sure you don't blow it, right? I beg you, I urge you. Look at this, the next verse. This is what kind of continues. I urge you to walk in a manner, lead your life worthy of the call that you've received because you have been called by God. His glory in his church for generations is on your shoulders. How you feel? You see, there's a reality that yes, it's for you and I today. His image, the weight of his glory is on you and me today. It's also demonstrated on them tomorrow. It's going to be seen throughout generations. It's longer than just your life or my life. It's throughout generations that his image gets seen and comes to bear on the world in which we live. And I think about this, and it rests on me, and I wonder, this idea of visionary leadership, and it's all this. And then I wonder, what if it's smaller than we think? What if leadership and influence is smaller than you think? And so whenever I do a series like this, I often start with some assumptions that I have about where you are, where we are, and just so we can all agree this is where Mike's coming from. And assumption number one is this: everybody has influence. Every human being has influence. So some of you think, oh, no, if I have a better position or if I had more power, if I had more followers on Instagram or more friends on Facebook, if I had a bigger platform, then I would have more influence. And so you think that influence is for someone else. And I'm telling you, everyone has influence. Let me prove it to you. I want you to raise your hands on this. How many of you guys can ruin someone else's day because of the mood that you're in? Guess what? You have influence. You do it every day, all the time. Most of us just think that influence or leadership or these kind of things are just big, big ideas. And the second thing is everything matters. Everything matters. Your successes, your failures, the things that you're good at, the things that you do well, the things that you struggle with, the times that you stumble, everything matters. I know there are a lot of college students in Wilmington, and the schools are back in, so a lot of kids are here and parents are here and college students are here. Kids, whatever. I'm a kid, so you get the idea. We're here and we're excited. And I know all these guys, you're looking, you're coming here, you're excited about your future. Like, we're going to do big things. And I hear people all the time say, Mike, I want to do big things for God. I prayed this prayer when I was in my 20s. I went outside. It was one night. There's a lot of stars in the sky. We were on the beach. I looked up at the sky and I said, God, I want to do big things for you. And he said, do you see that little pinprick of light up there? I said, yeah. He said, that's about 100 million light years away. I already do big things. I don't need you to do big things for me. I was like, point well made. But don't we think like this, right? Think about it. All of us judge the size of our influence or our impact on the size of the influence or scope of the influence we have. And in our culture now, we're like bent on building a platform. Everybody's got their own brand. Everybody's got their own thing. We're all trying to build a platform. And my question is, what, when we look at this over the next few weeks, what if influence is smaller than what you think that it is? The idea of influence is very simple. It's where one person makes a difference or affects change in another person. It happens in thousands of ways, tens of thousands of ways, millions of ways. And I remember there's this idea where we're looking to someone that we want to be like, someone that we think they are cool. And I can think of a million ways when this was me growing up. Remember, I wasn't a very cool kid. I thought that I was cool at the time. This is the greatest thing you'll learn probably is you think you are cool until you look back and realize, no, you actually weren't. It was just a phase, right? And so I remember thinking I was cool and trying to be cool, and I loved, there was one guy that was in my circle. He was a guy who kind of was older than me, and he mentored me, and I hung out with him a lot. He was one of my best friends growing up. He was about 4 years or 5 years older than me, and he was a good influence on my life. And his name was Donnie. And so I grew up in the 80s, many of you know this, and so he drove a 1976 white Camaro with traction bars and louvers and Krager mags. And if you grew up then, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You got a smile on your face if you know what I'm talking about. You're like, yes! And so he drove the cool car with the cool horn, and we would always cruise with him. But the coolest thing was Donnie had long curly hair, so I had a mullet with a perm. I'm not making that up. I've got pictures. And he had a Camaro stash, which is that little peach fuzz on your lip. And I wanted once I couldn't grow it. That's what happened. So I remember, though, the cool thing, I would sit there, and Donnie was so cool. And I remember that Donnie, in his 76 Camaro, whenever a really good song like Def Leppard would come on the radio, he would turn his radio up, and he would do it like this. He'd be in his car, and he would reach down, and he had his hand like this. He'd go. And I thought, that is so cool. So when I got my car, it was not a 76 Camaro. It was a Chevette. And a Chevette is like, it's like, there's don't even make cars that bad anymore. And I remember getting the car, and it was not a great car, but I had a really cool stereo. I had a Clarion stereo, just like Donnie. And I'd be driving the car, and whenever my song would come on, guess what I would do? So cool, right? My assumption is all of you have people in your lives that you thought what they did was so cool that you just imitated exactly what they did, right? No, I'm the only one? See, every profession actually has the same kind of thing. Like there's an iconic sort of perception of success in any industry or career path. A professor, you want to wear a tweed jacket with elbow patches. Maybe a pipe and some cool glasses, right? If you're a real estate agent, you want to look a certain way and you've got a certain kind of picture of this is what success looks like in this industry. Or if you're a teacher, you wear maxi skirts and cardigans and right? You've got this idea. I went to architecture school. There was Professor Cole. Professor Cole wore a bow tie. He had round glasses and he drove a Saab. You know what a Saab is? You're gone. That was what I wanted to be. I want to be you. And we live our lives trying to imitate that which we see. So my premise in this is that everybody is leading somebody somewhere. Everybody. Every one of you. Patrick led me to want a jean jacket with leather tassels. I can remember this stuff. I can tell you who they were and why I wanted to be like them in so many ways. And maybe I have just a vivid memory of my childhood, unlike most people, or I'm on to something that all of us have experienced and felt at some point in our life, and maybe some of us still are. You join a fraternity and you see a person and you want to be like that guy, or a sorority and you want to be like that girl. And if you look, they all look exactly the same. I'm not knocking it. I'm just saying that human beings are always looking to see who are we going to be like. And it's interesting that we were told, in the beginning, God made human beings. In the image of God, he made them. All of us are longing to be like somebody. And so God did for us what we needed, which to give us an image in which that could actually be true, and he gave us Jesus. So Paul later on writes this in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1, he says, and you should imitate me just as I imitate Christ. So we continue our little diagram. We'll make this Jesus, because he's got a crown, right? Is that Jesus? I'll put his name, since you're not sure if that's a crown or my spiky hair. And he says this, you imitate Christ, or you imitate me as I imitate Christ. So this nice little diagram, go, oh, this is a pretty simple thing to do. And then we read the context, because it says, if you put that verse back up there, it says, and. So if someone walks up to you and says, and then they went to the store, the question is like, well, what happened before they went to the store? And so this is kind of what happened. And you should imitate me. Well, what happened before the and? Well, here's what it says. Paul is talking in this whole section in 1 Corinthians 10. He says, there are a lot of things I can do, but not everything is profitable. There's a lot of things I'm allowed to do, but not everything is going to make an impact the way I want to. In other words, he's saying there are things that you do in your life that have a disproportionate influence on other people around you. Things that you do. And so he says this. So whether you eat or whether you drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. Don't give offense to the Jews or the Gentiles or the church of God. I too try to please everyone and everything that I do. Now, this is not about being a people pleaser. We can parse this later. But here's what he's saying. I don't just do what's best for me. I do what's best for others so that they may be saved. There's a mindfulness, an intentionality to what Paul and how he's leveraging his influence in the lives of other people. And it starts off with whether you eat or whether you drink, whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God, right? Then I want you to be mindful of your influence on others, and you should imitate me as I imitate Christ. So this is where we're sitting as we start this series. And I want you to think about a couple of things. Because what happens is he says, I want for you to imitate me. And then he says, just as I what? Don't answer it yet. I want you to answer for yourself. So I told y'all Madison was the guinea pig of my parenting adventure. And so when she was about 18 months old somewhere, she just started walking and started to chatter, and she was chattering enough where she would parrot what you said. You know what I'm talking about, right? And so I told you before, I have a pretty short fuse, and I can get very angry very quickly. And I remember one day when Madison was really small, I was out working, trying to fix something, which the lesson is I should never be trying to fix something because I can't fix anything. So I'm fixing this. I got a wrench in my hand, which is another mistake. I should not have a wrench in my hand. And so I'm working on this, and Madison somehow comes outside where I'm working, and I can't get this to work. I've been working on it, and I'm frustrated, and I took the wrench, and I slammed it down and said, dang it! And saw her, and she looked at me, and we said, hey. And then later on that day, I saw her in her room with her dolls trying to fix something. And when she came to work, she said, dang it! And I thought, I've just ruined my kid. Now, amazing, they're like resilient, right? They do better than we are sometimes. But I remember the vividly is you follow me just as I get frustrated, slam stuff, and say stuff. And I remember trying to figure out, okay, what do? Well, you make rules. You shouldn't slam stuff and you shouldn't say stuff. And what I did was I went to her and I asked her to forgive me, and I told her what a bad example that was and how daddy's learning and growing, and listen, you can pray for your daddy because he needs all the prayers he can get. You know, we talked about this. And she's little. She doesn't even remember it. She's little. Now she's probably going, I do remember that. You scarred me for life. And so, but my point is it was these little small things over time that I realized what has to happen is there has to be a level of trust between us in order to maintain influence. There has to be trust. Trust is the foundation of what? A relationship. It's a relationship. You see, When you draw this out, what you notice is a couple of things. You notice that there's a distance between these. Distance X is the distance between someone who follows you and you, and distance Y is the distance between you and Christ. And this picture by itself is how most of us think of something. It's how we teach stuff. Watch someone who knows what they're doing do it, and then you do just like they did. So the picture is that someone knows what Jesus is doing, they do that, and then you do exactly what they do. And what you're doing is you're always trying to figure out what are the rules, what are the parameters, what are the things that need to be done, and I'm going to do them just like the person that I admire, respect. I'm going to turn my radio up just like this. I'm going to wear a leather tassel jacket. And I begin to realize that when leaders lead from a distance, when you influence people from a distance, it doesn't matter in your company, it doesn't matter in a parent-child relationship, it doesn't matter where, in a classroom, when you lead from a distance, you've got one choice. You make policies and you make rules that frame the expectations. Don't slam stuff, don't say stuff. You make rules that make sure they behave the way you want them to. When you lead from a distance, you make rules. Your followers, when they are led from a distance, your followers merely observe and try. So I've been thinking about this. I mean, think about this. Some of the people are following people as they follow, and your whole life is trying more and more and more to do what that person is doing, and maybe somewhere it'll become like Jesus. And my thought was, what if we began to reduce these distances? What would happen if you were so close to Christ and you were so close to another human being that that person actually saw Christ and became what he wanted them to be and not what they thought he wanted you to be? This is why this is so important, because it's not in these big, giant things. What happens is when we change this, one way says, I'm going to make rules, you're going to observe and try. The other way says, we're going to come to Christ, we're going to see things differently, and you're going to see things differently. And when you see yourself differently, when you believe differently about yourself, everything is going to change. The most powerful thing sometimes you can do for someone else is to change what they believe about themselves. It's interesting that it talks about that it is glory in the church that God wants. Glory is weight. It is worth. You know, people I meet all the time that feel like they aren't worthy of anything good. I know people who are so successful and their whole drive is to prove that they actually are worthy. What if they just came to believe that you're worthy and that everything else becomes kind of an expression of that worth? When you change the way someone sees themselves, when you change the way they see and believe about themselves, you're going to change everything about them. This is what Paul is talking about. He's not talking about this. He says, I want to use every opportunity so that I can meet people where they are. They'll trust me so that they can have a relationship with Christ, so they can be saved. I grew up my whole life listening to people talk about leading people to Christ, leading people to Christ, leading people to Christ. And that is very, 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 very important. But leadership is not just a tool to lead people to Christ. You have to lead people in order to keep them there as well. And that's what a lot of us need. Keeping that distance tight. We're going to talk more about that. Here's what I want you to do over this week and the last few moments together. The reason I've called this As You Go is because of two big concepts, and one in the Old Testament, one in the New Testament. In the Old Testament, Deuteronomy 6, Moses gets all the fathers together and he says, hey, I want you to teach your kids about God. I want you to teach them when you wake up. I want you to teach them when you lie down. I want you to teach them when you eat dinner. I want you to teach them when you're taking them to T-ball. I want you to teach them in the carpool. I want you to teach them in the soccer field. I want you to teach them as you go. As you go. The Great Commission, right? Matthew 28. If you're a follower of Christ, this is your job. King James says, go ye therefore into all the world. And I'll tell you, I remember hearing that as a kid going, that's somebody else. Go ye there. I can't even get out of Atlanta. You know the word that's used in that verse means? As you go. It's as you go. It's as you do all the hundreds of small things that you do. If you don't get this, you will use people as a means to an end. Your kids, your wife, your husband, your kids, your students, your co-workers, your boss, your employees, everybody. You see, I got a chance to speak to the Brigade Boys and Girls Club a couple weeks ago, And I told them this. I said, really, the key is to do small things. The beautiful thing about this, when you do small things, the only platform required is a relationship. Most of us are so consumed with getting somewhere. When you learn how to lead small, when you learn how to do small things really, really well, which in fact, honestly, big things are just a pile of small things done really well. You want to do big things, just do small things really well. And the reason I say this is because when you do this, if you do what you can from where you are, that's what I want you to do. Do what you can from where you are. You have influence. You can ruin someone's day, right? If you can ruin someone's day, you can also make their day better. It's the same principle. And so what happens when you do what you can where you are, you begin to understand the significance of the small things which we tend to underestimate. Try this. Just when you notice someone, that you, some of you go to meetings and you got an agenda, you got to get things done, and you realize that you didn't even notice the guy beside you who's looked at the floor the entire meeting. We heard this in the Global Leadership last week about people telling that you know, just stopping someone and telling them that you believe in them, that you they matter to you. And they'll say, this is the only person who's ever told me that. Like, don't miss those opportunities. The small things matter. The second part is you understand the motive behind our action, which most of the time tend to go unnoticed. Our motives tend to go unnoticed because in American culture, Western culture, our motive is typically get stuff done. And if you don't ever question that, guess what's probably going to happen? Your kids are going to be driven by getting in a position to get more stuff done, be more successful, be more productive. Your marriage is going to be driven by getting stuff done. Your business is going to be driven by getting stuff done. You're going to miss the people in the process. And when you miss the relationship, you lose the influence. You might have power, you might have position, but you will not have influence. It is always in the small things. The thing I love about this, and I'm going to be done, so I know you're like, oh, it's already like lunchtime. It's raining, so we're not going anywhere, right? So I want you to get this. I want you to get this. Because this was my story. I never felt qualified or worthy to lead anybody, ever. I was so shy, and not shy like I would talk to anybody, but shy like I wanted to pretend like, oh, I really don't. I really can't do that. I shouldn't be doing that. And I was hesitant. And I was apologetic. And what it did to me and the wrestling in there, I think, was so important and so freeing. But when you understand that you can do what you can from where you are, what it does is it does two things. It frees you from trying to be somewhere else. How many of you, that's been your life story, right? You're always trying to get to the next thing. You're free from trying to be somewhere. You're trying to get to the next thing so you can finally do what you're supposed to do. Oh, when I get this promotion, when I get this job, when I get out of school, when I get out of grad school, when I get married, when I have kids, and you realize when that happens, everything's over. And you get this whole, I'm just kidding, you get this whole way of thinking. Because we spend our whole lives trying to get somewhere else, thinking that when we get there, we can finally do what God has called us to do. Y'all, when you just do what you can from where you are, guess what happens? You don't have to worry about being anywhere else. That is a great feeling. And secondly, and this may be most important, it frees you from trying to be someone else. And if I could throw something, go, dang it, that's what I want you to get. That's what I want you to get. I meet so many people who think if they could just be more like, if I just had this skill or that gift or this opportunity or that, and your whole life, I want to be Donnie, I want to be Patrick, I want to be Bill, I want to be John, I want to be all these guys. I had a list of people. I want to be Professor Cole. Until I finally realized that it was okay. That what Paul is saying, Mike, I urge you to lead a life worthy of the manner that God has called you. Because it's God who's called you. He's done the same thing for you. I don't want you to have my call. I don't want to have someone else's call. I want you to have your call. I want you to have what God has called you to do. And the way you find it isn't probably a burning bush. For some of you, it might be. It's probably going to be simply because you follow him. The more you imitate him, people will imitate you, end up imitating him. And here's the other freeing part about it. This is free. This doesn't cost you anything today. I want you to think about this. Most of us, when we're here and we're calculating influence, we're trying to figure out how is all this going to work out? What's the impact? What's the difference? What's the outcome of this? We're going to talk about outcomes. They're important. But what happens? We start looking at the people we're influencing and try to figure out how we're going to use these people to get the outcomes we long for. And what happens is people become a means to an end. When you reverse this and use this small things model, what happens is your only job is to imitate Christ, because he is the one who does the work to create the outcomes. And I'll tell you this. Remember the verse we read at the beginning? He is able to do immeasurably more than you ask or think. You don't believe that to be true? You are sitting in it. Never imagined. Afraid to ask. And this ain't me. This is us. You know what we did? We did what we could from where we are. We were faithful in the small things. You do that, and you'll be amazed at the difference that God uses you to be a part of. Because here's the thing. We're all trying to do, I mean, you think about our culture, what happened yesterday? You think about this. You're going to hear a bunch of politicians, blah, 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 blah. You know how much good it's going to do? None. Zip. And they're going to continue to do it and continue to do it and continue to do it. They're going to try to pass laws and make legislation, do all this other stuff. It is never going to work. Everybody's going to think we're going to solve this by doing a big thing. No. You solve it when thousands and thousands and thousands of people get serious about doing small things really well. Because that becomes a ripple effect that turns into a tidal wave of God's love. And that's what the world is desperate for more than anything else. Don't be overwhelmed, because it's a big job. God doesn't need us to do big things. He wants us to do small things well. And we do, it changes everything. Let's pray together. God, thank you. I'm so grateful for your patience, that for some you give these clear marching orders and burning bush experiences. I thank you for those people and those stories. I also thank you that you guide us one meandering step at a time sometimes. And that because you're generous and you're faithful, that we wind up right where you've asked us to be, because we followed. Father, my prayer is that not only will we follow you closely, but we'll be aware of those that are following us, that are looking to us for influence. And God, that when we think about this, you would help us to wrestle with, you follow me just as I. We would understand the implications of that statement, of your impact on our lives in the way we lead other people. God, that's my hope and my prayer. And I lift this to you in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.